a war between two big states has, I think, been unthinkable since really the 1940s. The thing that I'm more worried about, I could give you a great long list because I'm a rather pessimistic Glaswegian. The thing I'm more concerned about is that we already are at war in cyberspace. Cyber warfare is a permanent state of affairs, and there is no deterrence in this realm. There are state actors and non-state actors. They're engaged in activities that range from simple espionage and the theft of intellectual property to more deliberate attempts to disrupt vital infrastructure. I think we'll all wake up with a jolt when a very successful cyber attack hits the United States and causes very substantial disruption. We are the most networked of societies because we pioneered the internet and we have connected ourselves in a whole range of ways. The Chinese are ahead in some dimensions, but overall we're still far ahead. And that makes us the most vulnerable to a cyber attack. Our democracy has already been hacked, and I think the disruption that that caused is no longer really open to debate. But there's much more that could go wrong in this domain. And this is the real known unknown. We know it's a risk, but we don't really know how big a disruption could be caused. That seems to me more worth worrying about than scenarios that really belong to a different era, scenarios where battleships or aircraft carriers clash somewhere in the South China Sea. I think that's not going to happen.
Yippee!
What's the title of this thing? No title again?
Is it rolling, Bob?
What's all going on
now? Excuse me. It is.
What is it?
11:30 fucking something.
11:37. I arrived here at Warden Station at 11:31. The bus I needed left at 11:30. Like, I knew it was going to be close, but Jesus Christ, that's really annoying. But, so, of course, the next one, you know, 28 minutes, it's... I'll just have to wait. And I thought, well, if I'm going to wait, I may as well podcast. I've never podcast from here before. I have from the bench waiting for the bus, I'm pretty sure. But not from the main concourse where all the buses lead to. You get the platform 2, 3, 4, and so on. Oh, God forgive me. Well, no, God, not God forgive me. Sorry, got the hiccups. I ordered a very, very nice... an Indian something, you know, a wrap. It wasn't with chicken. What do you call these things? I got the vegetarian one, and as soon as she said it had cilantro, I said, "Ooh, I'll take it." It's a wrap. Well, I know there's a proper term for it. Anyway. This is Warden subway station. There's two shops, and they both sell great stuff. And when you're half drunk and you need a late night snack, this is the place to go. This is a main hub. I see people running like hell for the buses. The lights flash. You're just on the platform. They pull in and they pull out. They don't wait around. Dog. When I saw it was 11:31, I had the hope the bus might still be there, but it wasn't. Anyway, you're okay. Well, you know, it just means I get home half an hour later. I got to get up early tomorrow morning, come back, turn around, get on the number 9, the subway, line 2, line 1, get back to Ryerson, and be in good shape to do my presentation. It was fun tonight. I arrived early. I arrived right at 6. I sat up at the bar. There's nobody I knew. I did see there was a table in the back, but I almost guessed where a podcaster was. I didn't really want to have anything to do with them. So I sat at the bar. Some texting jokes going back and forth. Mark Blevins being very rude. Uncharacteristically rude. Anyway, I befriended the gentleman beside me. Next person who shows up, bald-headed. Ooh, that's Milan. Now, I was told on this podcast I have to introduce Milan as a character. Milan showed up at PodCamp Journal last year. And here he is again. He won't be here tomorrow night. But he knew a lot of the people from listening to my podcast. So, you know, oh yeah, it's Mark Blevins. That's Anthony, and so on, which I thought was pretty neat. So I think Anthony made the joke, yeah, we are just characters in Ken's podcast. And so now I have to bring him into the picture. Well, welcome to the picture, Milan. Milan, who I knew in Japan back in the early 90s, we connected through the Canadian Association of Teachers in Japan, I think it was. Canada-Japan Teachers Association, I don't know, something like that. We did hold meetings at the place where I work, this beautiful, beautiful, huge college-type thing our company built and then had it raised to the ground when the bills came due. What was that called? Setagaya Village. I have the key in my basement bar for it. And I spent many a time there. Canadian Embassy had functions out there. And it was a spectacular place thanks to that company that I joined. But anyway, that's around the time I met Milan. And he raised up an issue which I found so interesting because nobody else would know about this at all. I was editor of the Canada Association for Teachers in Japan, the Canadian Japanese Teachers Association, whatever this thing was. And I put out the newsletter, and when I did the very last one, I divided, I didn't do it in half, I did sort of, every second page was a Dixon Jeans page. I took it right out of the Dixon Jeans I was writing at that point and put it in with this. And joked, and Milan remembered that, of course. And he said, I said, yeah, I must have pissed a lot of people off. He said, yeah, you really did. Why did you do it? And I was tickled to meet somebody who said, who can remember that little piece of my history? And I said, because I wanted to piss people off. I was angry at people. And he wanted to know why I was angry. I didn't couldn't really give a good answer. But I just did want to do something that would annoy a lot of people. And I succeeded. I guess having, you know, supposed to take responsibility. I think what annoyed me was I got shouted down in the very beginning for not taking it seriously enough. And these people really wanted to know about teaching and making this a very respectable little journal. And I didn't quite see it that way. And I think I saw more of the creative side of teaching as being a little wacky. The wackier you are, the more likely you'll succeed in TESOL anyway, teaching English as a second language. Because you'll have the students' interest. And no, they want to go all theory and so on. And I think that's why I just said, well, fuck you. Here. I'm going to put out my last episode as editor, and I'm going to just throw something in there that doesn't belong at all, and it's going to annoy anybody trying to read it, wondering what this is. I think, I mean, I just stuck pages in, you know. It's probably a 12-page magazine. It probably had 6 pages of Dixon Jeans. Yes, that's right. We changed the name. We called it Canadian Content. And that's probably a collector's item. I should dig that out. I mean, I know I've got it. But I'm glad that I did that. And here we are, Milan, who showed up tonight at the Imperial Pub for our Friday night gathering. It's one of the few people on the planet who would actually even know what this was all about. So there you are. Thanks, Milan. And Milan is also a listener to the Dixon Jeans podcast and a responder as well. So here he is tonight. He shows up. He meets Connie, the librarian, who's not really a librarian. and finds out that she'd been leading information sessions of some kind, and he was a regular student, so they actually knew each other too. So when I left the bar to try and get this subway, which I just missed, or this bus, which I missed, he was sitting having deeply engaged in conversation with Connie. The younger friends I was wanting to hang out with, and did, were out front of the Imperial Pub having a toke. And I knew, you know, I could have stayed with them, had that toke, gone right back in, had another beer. I only had four in total, two pints, two cans. And I'd still be there now. And I'd be a little more fucked up tomorrow morning. So, I made the right call. And Joel, I wanted to see. Joel showed up. Squidpot Joel. I had, bam, got it. I get in the zone after talk. I stepped out and had a talk on my own. Brent was rude to me. I refused to let him join me. Stepped out front, had a talk, and came back in, and I was just on. And I think the people I talk to when I'm on appreciate it. I think. I mean, I could be totally wrong. There's a lot of jokes. Here's what I want to say. The more insults I received tonight, which is just another way of getting a lot of attention, the more I felt honored and actually felt wonderful. I really did feel beloved, if that's the right word. I did feel beloved. And, Christ, I keep getting emails or something. It was absolutely wonderful. And I feel really, really good about that. Okay, all kinds of Twitter notifications. Yeah. God, from long ago. Anyway, I guess that I should wind down now. How long have we been going? Not quite 10 minutes. Getting out drunk. Yeah, right. That's from Rob. That's Singapore. Used to be Singapore Sam. It's now Rob in Thailand. He's got another name. He asked me what I was up to. I said getting drunk and half stoned. Let's see. I've got a couple of Twitter messages. Do you want to share these with me? Okay. Anthony Marco, I'll be there. Is there someone we should leave the shirt that gets to you? I'll be there tomorrow, all right? No, we don't need to share that one. Connie. All right. Glad to see you from Connie. Connie has just been such a treat as being part of this group. And anyway, I guess that's it. I mean, this is very, very boring to anybody who doesn't know who these people are, but basically it's your fault if you know, because the whole point of this whole thing, the Friday night at the Imperial Pub, this tradition, is getting together. And Mark made the observation that it's fewer and fewer. Like, where is Jay Muna? Where's the guys from London? Where are all these other people who used to show up there? There used to be a lot more, and they're not now. And I argued, and I said, well, yeah, but those of us who are here are intimately connected through our podcast and so on. But yeah, the numbers are down. It is different and so on. So anyway, that's more than you need to know. Oh, my God, eh? I got another 10 minutes till my bus shows up. I'll be home by, in bed by 12:30 if I'm lucky. All right, boys and girls, this is the beginning of the PodCamp Toronto 2018. I love this event. I thank John as often as I could about what a wonderful job he's done putting this up there and putting out the messages and really looking after the whole sort of interface of it on the social media and everywhere else. Well done, John Alushinsky. Great to see everybody else, and I can't wait to see them again tomorrow. These are buddies. These are people I really enjoy and care about. And if you knew them, you would too. Scarborough Dude, signing out from the place that's known as the Warden Subway Station. Bye for now.
Hidey, hidey, old lady, the old lady, the old lady, the old lady. They call me the Yodeling Ranger. My badge is solid gold. I rove the land by the old Rio Grande and belong to that old ranger foe. When we are roving together beneath the bright Texas moon, I pillow my head on a desert sand bed and yodel this old ranger tune. Hallelujah, oh the old lady, the old lady. I sing when I am in danger, trust in my trigger hand. My heart is light as I ride through the night. I belong to that old ranger band. There's no place where I'm a stranger, and I'm never lonely long. Wherever we are, I have my old guitar and yodel this old ranger song. Hallelujah, oh hallelujah, the old lady. Hallelujah, old lady. The old lady.
And Garry Kasparov.
Yeah, no, it's a great one. Yeah.
Thank you. But you know, Garry Kasparov was on, who's no friend of Putin's, and he said something interesting. You know, the idea behind being a certain kind of autocrat like Putin, and Trump seems to emulate some of this, is not to say that this other person is always wrong. It's not to say that this other news outlet is always incorrect. And not to have every single outlet, lionize you and say everything you do is great. It's to cause people to not know what is true and what is not true. It's to sow confusion about what the truth is. So if somebody says, you know, this person was fired for this reason, or somebody says, this ruling is okay or not okay, Donald Trump can cast enough doubt about it that people have to wonder, are we getting the truth from anywhere? I mean, he flips on a regular. You know, there was a time when he said Fox News was terrible because they weren't saying good things about him. And then he says Fox News is great. There are times when he says, the New York Times is terrible, the failing New York Times. Then they say something positive, and then he calls them up and he sits for an interview and he says that they're terrific. He cites sources that he hates when they support him or support a proposition that he espouses. And then he does the opposite. And so it's kind of a confusing merry-go-round of truth, untruth, that that upends people's understanding and, I think, confidence in every outlet.
Check, check, check. Yeah, boy. It's just after midnight on, it would be Thursday morning then. And I'm in Vaughan. I don't think I've ever podcasted from Vaughan before. I'm sitting in a parking lot with a transport truck beside me, in a warehouse area where my son is working for the week. He got a job, number two son, who's been living at home with us, Chuck. He got a job on the 3 p.m. to 12:15 a.m. shift. I don't understand those hours. It used to be like 4 to 12, 3 to 11, but I seem to get an extra hour out of them here. And it is a place where they put together custom orders of a lot of organic food and things, and he's got to drive a little truck around and make up these things and, talk into a headset, and it's kind of neat, but the problem is, it's in Vaughan. After midnight, there's no way to get back home. And so I've been driving. In fact, tonight I had to have a nap before I came. Left the house around 11:30, and it's a half-hour drive there and back when you're not dealing with traffic. But it's not working out. I hadn't intended to go into this long, but it's just that's why I'm here, and we're very glad he got the job. He's very good at getting jobs when he applies. He seems to ace every interview. But without a car, and even with a car, half an hour is not that bad a commute, you know. If you're doing this day shift, it'd be horrible. But anyway, it may be my last night. We might have one more night. We'll see how it tonight went with him. And I thought I'd use this time to do a little bit of a podcast recap over PodCamp Toronto. I got things to say. It was a great time. Sorry. Whoa, big trailer coming in. Oh, yeah, I'm clear. It was a great time, especially as far as the partying goes. And I guess that's the part I want to talk about. We've already covered things on the sessions, and so has everybody else. When I get buzzed, like when I go to a bar and it's party time, and I'll have a few beer, and then I'll step out with somebody like Squid Pod Joel, and I'll have a toke. I'm flying, and I come across almost, I think it's like a cokehead, because I get really buzzed and very happy, and I'll just talk to anybody, and I'll just motor on. I'm on a roll, and it's probably, to others, it might be a bit obnoxious. For myself, I'm flying, man. This is cool. This is great. And sometimes, you know, if I'm calm, I can actually deliver a very good stream of speech. And I'm looking at my son actually through the window now. It's kind of funny. Parked outside the warehouse. I can actually get things going. But this particular Saturday night at the Pacific Junction Hotel, I think I was a bit obnoxious. I got the idea in my head. It's because I'm reading a great book, which is going to be a movie soon, Ready Player One. Shane gave it to me, and it is a great book. And that movie, wow, that is one I want to see. Anyway, I got it in my head. I said, you know, if this was a game, if life was a game like the way you guys play video games, because I'm very aware that I've never been engaged in these simulation games, these shooter games. There's a lot of things I just simply don't do that haven't been part of my life. Well, here's my son, so I'm going to shut it down. Bye for now. Yeah, check, check, I'm back. Okay, so I left off. My son was just coming out of work. And I just shut this baby down. It is the next day. I just drove him into work, and on the way, coming home, I see these flashing lights behind me. What the hell? Who are they after? It's a police car, and the lights, it's right on my tail, and the lights are going. I'm like, who is that for? Like, what? It can't be for me. I'm not speeding. I'm not doing anything wrong. And I was just about to turn onto the DVP, or the 404 South. I thought, you know, there is nobody else they're after. Like, this is, you know, a horn just went. They're right on my tail. It's me. So I pull over to the side just before getting on the, leaving 7 onto the 404. Pull over and stop, and sure enough, a police officer gets out. Extremely polite. I'm so impressed, in spite of the fact that the end of it is I got a $110 ticket, which I'm going to have to pay. I'm at Cedarbury Mall, where I just dropped another $120, and that is for the sticker that goes on your license plate that had been expired in February 2016, so well over a year out of date. It's because when I switched over, sold my Mazda to get my wife's new Mazda, and I took over her Toyota. I just forgot to take the plates off the Mazda that had a sticker on them. Couldn't get any rebate on that, which I should have. The dealer should have fucking told me, you know, hey, don't you want your plates back? Really pissed. It's not something you think. I mean, I was dropping it off, picking up our new car. Just not something that occurred to me. Anyway, my bad. I didn't do it. Forgot to take the plates off. And then never did anything more about it. You know, you always get something in the mail reminding you of renewal for your new stickers. And we got them. But we put them on the new Mazda my wife got. Anyway. I don't feel bad about it. Like, okay, yeah, I paid. I mean, I was guilty. I had a very pleasant exchange with the person. I said, you're so polite. She said, well, you are too. It was it was actually a nice encounter. And clearly, I was in the wrong, you know, and that was it. And she apologized for taking so long. Computer technical difficulties writing up the ticket. Anyway. So that brings me to Cedar Bay Mall, and I decided, well, I'll record from here. I'm not going to go to the park or anything. So I'm on the roof. There's a second level of Cedar Bay Mall, and it's got to be one of the most ugly sights you could think of. It's gray skies all around. You're sort of seeing the tops of apartment buildings and the big Cedar Bay Mall sign when they tried to jazz it up. But where do we leave off? I left off. I was explaining what a jerk I was Saturday night at the Pacific Junction Hotel. I told you I get a little coked up, it seems, when I combine weed and beer. And I got it in my head, or I pretended, that I'm really good. If life was one of these video games you play, I would really be good at it. I'd be racking up a really high score. That's what I was going with. And I went around telling it to people. And I asked, I remember I told it to John Leshinsky, something like that. And I said, did you understand what I said? And he said, I wasn't listening. It's so trivial. And it was very funny. And then, of course, he laughed, and I slapped him on the shoulder for congratulating him for giving me a very fitting put-down. But also that same night, I talked to people, I don't know whether they're from Girth Radio, whatever, the people who run the studio that's attached to the Pacific Junction Hotel, somebody called Sammy, who I met before at a podcaster gathering, and, I approached them because I had been to their presentation. It was a group presentation. And I complimented the woman who was there on what a good job she did. And they were all, oh, did you hear that? Somebody was listening. And I said, oh, not only that. And I quoted her. And not only that, I took up my iPhone where I had written down what she said. And I think the line was what? We are all building community or something like that. Anyway, they were super impressed. Oh, my God. The guy... Stop. I got a recorder fucking thing going. Don't know how to shut it off. They said, this guy actually made a note of what you said. So I was highly buzzed by that point. And I really hammed it up. And said things like, I'm a really interesting guy. And I did a rant, like in one of those things, you know, you just, it's almost like rapping, except it's me talking like I really am an interesting guy. And I went on to the Dixon Janes, who they were, what it meant, Baby Sally, the 60s, the dope, the stories, I just, wham, put it on. And then I think in the middle of it, I said, are you actually listening? Oh, yeah, yeah, it's interesting. And then was offered to go see their studio. Just downstairs. And by that point, in my mind, I thought, oh, the reason they want me to go down to the studio is these guys want me right now. They want to record me because they realize I'm really special and they want to get this right now because I'm really worth something. And I said, oh, yeah, would you like to see the studio? Yeah, sure. And then I wandered back and met Connie and gave her a hug and said, you know, I've been invited down to see this podcasting studio, but I don't want to leave my friends, you and John and Mark and all the people I've been sitting with all night. Why would I do that? But I need you to convince, I need help making a decision here. I know it's the wrong thing to go down. So anyway, I'm making a boring story even more boring. I went back to these people and said, look, I got to be with my friends. I can't go right now. I got to be with my friends. But why don't you send me an official invitation? And I really played it up like just an actual Google Scarborough dude and then send me an invitation to your studio, a proper one, to invite me to be a guest. And, of course, I haven't heard from them and never will. And I remember at the end of that saying, I hope you understand my sense of humor, like that was meant to be funny. But at the same time, I was really thinking at the time, I am so shit hot. These guys are really going to want me, and I'm going to get a nice invite by mail. Hey, when can you come down? We'd love to interview you. And I fool myself every time thinking that people must find me interesting. And I'm beginning to get these clues that maybe that's not quite true. You might be off. You're finding yourself very interesting because you're loaded and buzzed. But it doesn't necessarily translate into other people's interests. So there you go. That's my confession. I'm just saying, yeah, I'm beginning to slowly become aware that I can be a bit of a jerk sometimes, a bit of an asshole, and certainly a bit full of myself, thinking I'm pretty shit all wonderful. So that's it. That's all I wanted to say on that topic. I don't think there's any more to say about the Saturday night. Oh, yeah, my presentation, like I realize also it is always of a certain type. I shouldn't do anymore. That it's never quite practical. It's always kind of, I get into a personal space, which is what the podcast is really about or what I believe they should be about. And I get a little teary-eyed, but also realize that this is just not everybody's cup of tea. People want somebody, a straight shooter of practical answers to solve problems, you know. And my going on about trying to be a personal podcast evangelist just really doesn't catch people. And there are very, very few other than my friends who actually came. Kind of my friends I would have been sitting in a room with, what, maybe 1, 2, 3 strangers, if that. Very, I'm thinking, oh, that should get some people. It didn't. So what am I saying here? I'm making it sound like this is all a failure. No, I'm just being overly reflective and smacking myself around for being so full of myself. That's what I'm doing. So let's park that. My son went in today. I'll pick him up again at midnight. And that will be the end of his first week. And then he'll have to decide whether this job is worth keeping. And we'll have to find alternatives to me driving him because this can't go on forever, especially if I take off on the road trip. All right. I thought I had a whole lot more to say, but I probably don't. So I think I'll stop here. I'm doing this whole podcast in bits and pieces. It's a bit of a smorgasbord. And I'll go back to... Well, no, I won't go back. I was listening to Brandon John because MMD recorded theirs and put it up, which was very good of him. But, you know, I've heard them before. Been there, done that. So we'll just call it quits from the roof of the Cedarbury Mall. Scarborough Dude, yours truly, the host of the one and only. Signing off.
Well, I've already had 2 beers. I'm ready for the broom. Please, Mrs. Henry, won't you take me to my room? I'm a good old boy, but I've been sniffing too many eggs, talking too many people, drinking too many cakes. Please, Mrs. Henry, Mrs. Henry, please. Please, Mrs. Henry, Mrs. Henry, please. I'm down on my knees. pretty soon I'll be mad. Please, Mrs. Henry, won't you take me to your dad? I can drink like a fish, I can crawl like a snake, I can bite like a turkey, I can slam like a drake. Please, Mrs. Henry, Mrs. Henry, please. Please, Mrs. Henry, Mrs. Henry, please. I'm down on my knees, and I ain't got a dime. Now don't cry, me lady, or I'll fill up your shoe. I'm a sweet bourbon daddy, and tonight I am blue. I'm 1,000 years old, and I'm a generous bomb. I'm T-boned and punctured, and I've been known to be calm. Please, Mrs. Henry, Mrs. Henry, please. Please, Mrs. Henry, Mrs. Henry, please. I'm down on my knees, and I ain't got a dime. I'm starting to drain, my stool's gonna squeak. If I walk too much farther, my crane's gonna leak. Look, Mrs. Henry, there's only so much I can do. Why don't you look my way and pump me a few? Please, Mrs. Henry, please. Please, Mrs. Henry, Mrs. Henry, please. I'm down on my knees, and I ain't got a dime.
I'm going to pull an Anthony Marco here. I'm going to include the Doors on this podcast, and I don't mean Jim Morrison. Shit, where did I put the keys? There we go. Ooh. What was that noise? Wind chimes. Go. Oosh. You gotta really climb up into this, baby. Sorry about the extra noise. Oy. Let's get this baby fired up, dude. I haven't done this for quite a while. Ooh, okay. Oh, it's time. Time to do another Dixon Jeans podcast clip. That's what we're here for. I think I'll keep the engine on for a little bit, if you don't mind. Car's been plugged in, but I haven't fired it up for at least a week. And, I don't know, every time I look out and see it in the driveway, we get a fresh snowfall, it gets covered, and I feel sad. Now it's melted, and I feel, oh man, I gotta get out there. I think last year I did a trip to Algonquin Park. Oh, it's open all year round. It was icy and cold, but it's a bit of a distance. There must be something closer, a provincial park that I can go to. But I really do have to get this out on the road soon. Even just for a short trip, just to sort of break the seal. Because I'm not doing that. It's March now, March 2nd, I guess, 3rd today. Oh, everything I thought I'd get done in February, this kind of carried over into March. I got some stuff done, but there's so much more to take care of. Anyway, I had a lot of things that I wanted to talk about for this particular podcast, but I didn't make notes, and I'm not sure I'll get to them all. There's an overlap with my Facebook. I just posted a link from an article from the Toronto Star about Greta Vosper, and wanted to share that with any of my Dixon Jeans friends, for anybody who would take the time to read. It's a good article. Greta Vosper is the minister at my church, West Hill United, who is under fire for declaring herself an atheist. They're saying, if only she had said, I'm a non-theist, she might have got away with it. Her reasoning was, she wanted to take the power away from the word atheist in solidarity with the people who are being hacked to death for calling themselves that. And I get that. I get that. And it's just, it's making people think. It's just, oh, God. I won't go on about it because maybe you've already got your opinions formed, but it is so short-sighted of the United Church of Canada to take this on and try and get rid of her. There's a pettiness, there's a vindictiveness, there's a small-mindedness, and it's caving into the conservatives, and this is not the time to do that. This is the time when we need liberal thinkers with courage to speak out. And that's just not happening in this case. I think I'm going to shut the engine off. It's not really that cold. It doesn't need to be warmed up. So here we go. So anyway, that's one thing. The other thing is I've been listening to online, an audiobook, The Atheist Muslim, A Journey from Religion to Reason by... Ali Rizvi, I don't pronounce that name right. Rizvi, I think, anyway. Here in Toronto. And I am just so overwhelmed in a positive way by his courage, by the things he has to say, by his reasoning, and by him calling out the Quran for what it is, just another fucking holy book written by humans to preach their beliefs. And, I mean, a few years ago, I harped on this a lot more and then just sort of stopped. And I didn't do it out of fear. Nobody listens to this show anyway. But almost, you know, the people, one of the topics he picks up is Islamophobe. And how that's hurled around by people who might be, rightly so, criticizing certain tenets or aspects of Islam, but groups are using it to say, no, really what they're doing is they're dissing all Muslims. And that is not what it is about. And he makes that so clear. I should record a clip here. I'll just press the button.
Rebutting them with verses from the Quran was a fruitless endeavor. You would simply be met with an eye roll and condescendingly pitied for your naivete. Oh, come on, Ali. You know those verses have been mistranslated and misinterpreted. People have twisted the words of the Quran to suit their agenda. But this is not the case. It is the less informed, moderate, and liberal Muslims who seem to have misinterpreted many of these verses to represent something much tamer and palatable than their actual meaning. An excellent example to illustrate this is found in the most famous and contentious verse in the Quran about women. Surah 4, verse 34. Verse 34 of Surah An-Nisa, the women, is one of the most widely debated Quranic verses there is. It establishes a hierarchy of authority, where men are deemed to be in charge of women. It also asks wives to be obedient to their husbands, and allows their husbands, in the most controversial part of the verse, to beat them if they fear disobedience. The translation of the verse is as follows. Men are in charge of women by right of what Allah has given one over the other and what they spend for maintenance from their wealth. So righteous women are devoutly obedient, guarding in the husband's absence what Allah would have them guard. But those wives from whom you fear arrogance, first advise them. Then if they persist, forsake them in bed. And, emphasis added here, finally, strike them. But if they obey you once more, seek no means against them. Indeed, Allah is ever exalted and grand. This is the Sahih International translation, which most widely accepted translations are consistent with. Yusuf Ali, M.H.A.,
okay.
Musin Khan, Press of...
I'm going to just stop that. That's just a sample, and it was a random, it just happened to be where I was in the book. This is somebody who was raised a Muslim, and somebody like myself who's not, people just say, oh, well, you just don't like that religion, you're just bigoted and biased and so on, but, you know... When I think of this Old Testament fucking asshole God that people would believe in, like, what? Are you stupid? That's a God? You assholes. You know, it's infuriating to even think that people would follow such things, that people would believe this shit. I guess that's what it comes down to. And I'm sorry, I know I've got people. You know, if you want to follow some of the great ideas behind Christianity, for example, because it's the only religion I know all that well, about kindness and forgiveness and loving your neighbor and all those things. Great, act it in real life without all the other shit that goes with it. You know, and again, this is why I get back to Greta Vosburgh. It's your deeds, not your words, not reciting this or that. And so, again, there may be certain things about Islam that, you know, giving money to help the poor and, you know, maybe learning something through fasting for a while and lots of things about it and lots of good people, well-behaved with a good moral compass, thanks to maybe some guidance from the religion, but all the other shit that goes with it that's in that book, that holy book that cannot be disputed, that cannot be questioned by, you know, others, and for a religion where you just can't leave on pain of death. Like, what? This is fucking barbaric. This is ridiculous. And I guess where I'm really at and where I'm really disturbed is the fact it's not here in North America, not in Canada, where I can say whatever the fuck I want. And this is what Ali and these others talk about, you know, those who have come out and become, denounce the religion or renounce the religion. They're free here to say what they want, and they don't necessarily need police guards, the way Salman Rushdie did. But any other part of the world, you just don't do it. It's submission, and you dare to raise your voice or question these things, jail, imprisonment, flogging, or death. And this is, I would guess we could say this is growing. Well, Christianity might be falling in numbers, and you know, I don't know. I don't know the stats, and I don't want to have that argument. But just, it's a lot harder to leave Islam than it is any other religion. And it's certainly easy to grow when you have laws in place and the government ruler, the rulers of the country, dictating this is our state religion and this is what you have to abide by and follow, you know, on fear of death. Then, wow, it's an uphill battle. And when you think science fiction, you think of visions of the future that are dark, that you don't want to imagine happening. It's easy for me to say, to imagine a world with something as blind and as pig-headed, forgive me, as Islam according to the Quran, you know, following these dictates that this is it, this strict, narrow interpretation. This is the holy book. It cannot be questioned. These are the rules. And this is what you must obey. Whoa, fuck. And people who speak out, bam. And I guess what he gets into in his story is how in the past, people who question Christianity, you know, lost their lives over this, heretics, they went through their hell, but we've had our reformation, we've had our enlightenment, and it's people like him who are saying, okay, now, hurry up, it's time for Islam to also bring itself into the 21st century and become in keeping with the times and not going backwards to these rules that might have worked in parts of the world in the 7th century, but are not applicable now. So anyway, I feel when I listen to him, I gain strength because I have a very liberal bias. I'm very, and I am a person who does not like rules and does not like obedience and does not like conformity. I mean, these things just are a heresy. I mean, I would be the first in line to have my head sliced off because, whoa, sorry, I'm not giving into that shit. Somebody, it's so easy for people to say, oh, I'm bigoted, you're anti-Muslim. Fuck you, fuck you, fuck you. And another point he makes is that words are so important, and the meaning and the interpretation and the nuances in language. And what really, really put me over the top of being so excited about this is him quoting Richard Dawkins and Sam Harris and others. In their words and their thoughts and their bravery and the things they come out against, which the left is having trouble with. The left is sort of trying to, oh, well, no, the Muslims are being treated badly. We have to come up on their side and defend them and end up defending this fucking holy Quran which is just another fucking book written by men that has no fucking meaning and no connection to God or religion or holiness or anything else. It's like a poison, and I need to get that poison out of my system. And the more you sort of hold it back out of political correctness or fear of offending somebody or being misinterpreted, the more it eats at you. So I'm feeling, I guess, the need for a cleansing, but also feeling I'm having that cleansing by listening to him and Sam Harris and others. It's just tremendously encouraging. And I'm going to add Greta Vosper to that list of people. So there's a lot of things in my life, and I'll get back to that. My life, is that's all I fucking talk about on this show. And I'm sorry, that's all I know and that's all I can do. And I know there's an awful lot of ego involved, and but I am trying to share my journey, and I am trying to say there are forces and influences that I'm delighted about that are shaping my journey and influencing me. And I've always been looking for something. You know how I harp on the Beats as sort of these people I hold up, even though they were such flawed characters with so many marks against them. It's their vision, their ideal, what they were reaching for, that I admire and respect, and I think still holds true today. A couple of nights ago, I watched How the Beatles Changed the World, and it just reinforced my love for the Beatles, my love for John Lennon in particular, and how important they were and how much they shaped my life, how much they guided my life. And it wasn't just the music. So anyway, that's all this is sort of seems to be coming together. So it's as if I've been searching for, you know, answers, looking for, you know, a holy man, a guru, somebody. And I'm finding it in a different world altogether. I'm finding it in sort of anti-holy men and, you know, atheists and people not buying into the prepackaged bullshit. But people saying, strike out on your own, use reason, think things through. So, God, 15 minutes already. I guess that's as far as I'm going to go on that. I just want to add in that last night, Friday night, I met John Meadows and the lovely Lisa at the only cafe. We had our usual big table on the coffee shop side. We sort of moved in. We don't get the front table. We moved to the coffee shop side and had a very good conversation that went into darkness. And this is shortly after I returned from my toke. Both intelligent people, and John, a deep thinker and an honest man, and somebody really worth listening to. And we talk about our characters and our own shortcomings and our need for recognition and so on, all these other things about our egos and personalities that can get in the way of our growth and development and our you know, living on a higher plane. You know, you can't escape our basic human needs. But we got into the discussion of sort of the future, what it looks like. And there's a part of me that is just very grateful that I'm not going to be around that much longer. I won't see into the distant future at all. But the feeling I think we all agreed on, it's going to be dark, and it upsets me to think that, because I'm an optimist at heart. I want to remain optimistic. I want to just see the good that we have in us. I want to go back to that 1967 time of the summer of love, the hope, the peace, love, bring an end to the war in Vietnam. And then last night I watched the Rolling Stones, a documentary on them, which was very, very good too. A new one on Netflix. It covered the Altamont concert where the Hells Angels were in charge of security and somebody was killed and there was beating. And you saw the Stones, you know, flown in by helicopter and were just terrified. They left out a whole lot of, you know, Jefferson Airplane being one of the leaders, forget his name, being punched in the face and knocked out. And the violence, the horror within, you know, 1 year of the Summer of Love, it come to an end, and it still sends a chill down my spine, because I think, yeah, the forces of darkness, and I don't mean the Rolling Stones, they were expressing what was already out there, it was endorsed and produced by Mick Jagger and Keith Richards and the others, and so it is worth watching. Email me, Google me, whatever, or Twitter, tweet me if you want to know the exact name. But that darkness that is always so close at hand, and I think the conclusion we came to, it was very easy to imagine. America, you know, I asked John what he thought, and it was, these are the final days of the fall of the Roman Empire, and America's going to go down, a lot of people are going to go down with it, a lot of innocent people who don't want it, and I'm clinging on to this hope, but there's so many good people, there's so many of us who are good, who are kind, who don't want blood in the streets, who, you know, want to reason our way out of this. But when you consider who they have for president now and the way he works and the tactics that got him elected and the number of armed people up in arms about taking away the right to have these automatic weapons. I saw a bit of an interview on TV with some woman who's... And you could tell the underlying current was... wasn't just the government coming to my door. It was if these black people or anybody else who's different from her, the Muslims, anybody, come to her door, she wants that automatic weapon ready just to spray anybody who comes even on her front lawn. And it's so easy to imagine if, you know, a flip in an election, if Trump was, if they tried to get him out of office. A country that's already had a horrific civil war not that long ago, being back, erupting in flames over this. And that's tragic, and it's a frightening scenario. Whew. Anyway, I guess the point of that maybe was how wonderful it still is to be able to hop on the number 9 bus, jump on the subway at Warden, get off at Donlan's, and just step right into the only cafe and enjoy some really good beer and good conversation with people you really like being around. It's just an absolute gift and a wonderful thing in life. And, there was one more thing. Damn. Do I have time? I'll do it as a separate clip. I'm going to end this, and it'll either be the start of the next show or the end of this one. All right, I'm going to sign out now from my... The sun is shining. I got to put a decal on my license plate to... be in keeping with the law, and do something worthwhile on this Saturday. And I don't want it to be something I don't want to do. I want to do something that I want to do, which is what I've just done. Scarborough Dude, signing out. Bye for now.
Thanks. Thanks a lot. I got a broken heart. That's all I've got. You made me cry, and I cried a lot. I lost your love. Baby, thanks a lot. You told our friends as I was passing by that you're not sorry, that you made me cry. You said I deserved just what I got. Well, if that's how you feel, honey, thanks a lot. Thanks. Thanks a lot. I got a broken heart. That's all I've got. You made me cry, and I cried a lot. I lost your love, honey, thanks a lot. Ah, Pete Mitchell.
Ernest Tubb, I love you.
And I love you too, Loretta. Also, I love to hear you sing, honey.
You wanted a fool, and I played the part. Now all I've got is a broken heart. We loved a little, yeah, we laughed a lot. thanks a lot.
Thanks. Thanks a lot. I got a broken heart. That's all I've got. You made me cry. And yeah, I cried a lot. I lost your love. Honey, thanks a lot.